Good.
The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mrs. Nelson, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Solak?
Here.
Mr. Bender?
Okay, are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Hearing none, we'll move on to presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
And we want to welcome Scott, who is our only representative here from Churchill this evening, who is going to do a presentation on a new initiative that two of our schools are participating in. It's called a Powerful Learning Practice, and it is a consortia of schools, and I won't say much more, but you should have a copy of the PowerPoint in front of you. And Scott's going to show and demonstrate and share with you what this initiative is all about and how it's impacted Churchill.
Good evening, everyone. Can everyone see that we're going to use the smart board tonight? It's the first attempt for me at using the smart board.
All right.
I've worked through this. I haven't had many opportunities to do this. And so we'll go ahead and work my way through this. And Mike, I need to holler. But Powerful Learning Practice, PLP, one more acronym to kind of throw out there for everybody as we refer to it here. But kind of fitting that we're doing this today, as we had Institute Day today, as we were at Hadley learning about our ENL learners and spending the day with a lot of hearing different presentations and more of what I consider to be the traditional professional development that we have had as educators, where we would come together and learn around a particular topic. Powerful Learning Practice, however, is a little bit of a different slant on that, where it tries to give us the opportunity to look at our interests and where we are with education and discuss and dialogue and ask inquiry questions. And so I found a quote, 21st Century Skills, Rethinking How Students Learn. One of the authors, contributors to this book, Will Richardson, is one of the co-founders of the PLP. There we go. And he has this quote in the book that we now officially live in a world where even 12-year-olds can create their own global classrooms around the things about which they are most passionate. And even better, grown-ups can too. It's a world of learning built on the connections that individuals create with one another, the personal networks that people build with far-flung, like-minded students and teachers, and the anytime, anywhere communities of practice that grow from them. So we are part of the Dallas-Dublin cohort. And when I first went to the staff, no, not Dublin, Ireland, Dublin, Ohio, and Dallas, Texas. Karen had, I think, gone to a presentation last year where she had come back and had met some of the people that were a part of this and heard about this opportunity. And it really was a unique opportunity to participate in. It's long-term job-embedded professional development, and it helps us understand the 21st century skills that we're trying to help our students ultimately understand. And it gives us a community of practice where we can begin to have those important conversations about how to balance those changes of what that learning is going to look like for our students and for us in the classroom. And so she came back to us and said, anyone interested in taking a look at this? What do you want to do? And we talked a little bit about it, and two of the schools, Franklin and Churchill, decided that we were going to be a part of it. But we were a little bit different. There are 26 different learning teams that make up the Dallas-Dublin cohort. Those learning teams are represented by 19 schools representing six different states, as you see that I have listed here. Churchill and Franklin are part of the global team. We do all of our work virtually through some of the different vehicles that I will discuss here in a second. A lot of the other schools did what they did, a face-to-face meeting at the very beginning of the year as a kickoff, where they all got together and either drove to Ohio or drove to Texas and met and spent a couple days learning about this process, learning about some of the tools that they would use, and then they are going to get back together at the end of the year and do kind of a culminating project. We weren't able to get things together quite like that and didn't feel like it was really worth the drive for a day to turn around and come back. And so Karen had actually gotten permission, I believe, that they were looking to have people be a part of this group to have us be a virtual team or a global team where all of our work is done online. And so Franklin and Churchill have teams. Churchill has a slightly larger team than Franklin. I had a little bit more interest when I first went to people and said, hey, what do you think about this? And so we have my team made up here of myself, and then I have representation from 5th grade, 4th grade. I've got my library media specialist, 2 second grade teachers, a bilingual teacher, a first grade teacher, and also Christina Kellum serves as kind of a, she helps us. She helps both groups out. She's helping Franklin a little bit more than she's helping us. We have actually another contact person through the PLP that is working with us, but that is the team as we are made up. And so Whitney Crouch is my first grade teacher. Whitney also has, she has done quite a few different projects in the classroom with technology. And so I asked her if she would actually take the lead and kind of be our team leader for this team. And so she has done that. She has been participating in a number of different conversations with some of the leaders of the PLP around the work that we're doing, and just kind of getting us going and getting us headed off in the right direction. So in year one, our focus is that we're to understand the global changes that are created by the online social technologies and the implications that those have for our teaching and learning, provoking deep thinking about professional and personal learning practice, and understanding the practical and pedagogical implications for the classroom.
Scott, is this your local focus, or is this the whole...
Open.
Okay.
Open for everybody. So also, we're going to be asked to conduct action research that is aligned to our school improvement goals, and we're also going to initiate district-wide, hopefully, conversations and planning around the long-term change and the scaling of these ideas and technologies. And so starting to look at what we can do to bring this idea to the district, well, first of all, to our school, and then bigger to our district. The first thing we did is we took part in Illuminate webinars. There are 5 different sessions that happen throughout the year. We've gone through 2 of them so far, the first two, which was the first one was setting the stage, teaching and learning in the 21st century, and then looking at network-driven inquiry, technological pedagogy in action. These last 3 we will still be going through. A webinar, essentially, I can bring up the screen here, just kind of show you, it's like a virtual chat room. And I took a picture here of one of the ones as I went back and looked through the archives. But essentially, all of your participants here, and you've got this online chat that's going while you have people talking to you in this virtual room. We found this pretty difficult from a starting point. Close to 100 people in the room and people going and talking all at once. And we ourselves are all in, usually in this room or in the lab, and we're trying to listen and trying to talk and answer questions and kind of go that route. And so the Illuminate webinars have been a little bit difficult, I would say, for us to get used to and to get started with. But we are doing that. We have the opportunity through those webinars to be able to talk into a microphone so that the whole community can hear us. We can hear what they're saying. And you can also have side conversations and chats going on. You can take polls and ask questions, and you can raise your hand if you have a question, just very simply, and go through a lot of those different things. And so it's a different style of learning for us, different type of learning, and something that we are still very much adjusting to as we are working through this course.
So it's all auditory. There's no Skype, too. I mean, usually,
well,
I mean, I've participated, but I'm sure we've all maybe done a webinar. Usually
right.
There's a visual component.
Presenters can pull up here into the window. They can pull up things, look at this diagram, look at this. We haven't seen people necessarily.
Okay.
It's been more of, what do you think of this document or this diagram, those kinds of things.
Okay,
and so
you really have to pay attention.
You do. And it was the very first time it was, we all got together here, and we had the entire Churchill team plus the Franklin team, and we were all here in this room. And we had technical difficulties at first trying to get the computers up and running, and so we were a little bit behind, and people trying to figure out what was going on, and so it was frustrating, I think, for a lot of people to be able to hear. So it's a new way of learning for us. I don't know really how much we've totally gotten out of this portion of it yet, because we're still trying to get used to it. Second time, we did figure out, okay, maybe it's best that Franklin stays at Franklin. And we'll see if that works a little bit better. It did go a little bit better, but it's still difficult. And with that many people in a room, that many people at once talking.
Mm-hmm.
different, again, just a different style of learning to adjust to.
Do they provide a summary of your chat comments that you can look back on? Is that
they do, and that's actually where I went back in and I pulled. You can actually go back and you can re-listen to it. You can listen to the
They recorded it. Yeah,
and you can go back, and that's where I pulled the screenshot from.
Having the documentation that helps to go back if you miss
it. It does help, and you can hear things, and you can, so it's all recorded, and you can go back and take a look at that. So it is helpful. What did I miss? Did I miss that someplace? We were talking at the very beginning, the very first one. We were all trying to figure things out. I was a little irritated because they said first person. They were showing us the different tools and said first person to raise their hand, and somebody raised their hand, and that person was given a free iPad. And it's like, it would have been nice if we'd have been listening at that point. been the first ones there, but we missed out on that opportunity. So those kinds of, but it has been an adjustment for us to learn and work with. But again, it's something that we are adjusting.
What is pedagogy?
Pedagogy
is the practice. Help me here.
It's the practice.
It's the instructional practices. It's the
it's the belief system behind what you do.
Yeah.
It's the belief system behind what you do.
Okay.
Moving on. We use these tools. The first is a name. Let's see if I can bring up my name here. And this is probably the piece that we're using the most. A powerful learning practice thing. And so the thing is basically a social network. It's a private social network that you have to be registered for and have a password to get into. And then when you get into the thing, there are... Does that work with this here? Go to my page. And then there are some places. This is really strange to look at. There are discussions. And I'm trying to find out. Well, you see my activity of things that I've tried to hear. There are discussions over here. There. As I kind of work through. And so discussions that I have taken a part in, just in terms of responding to, and again, like any other social site, you can see what the activity has been, how many people have replied, who's replied to you, and you can kind of get in and mess around a little bit and start having some of those conversations. When you actually get into all the discussions that are out there right now on this particular Ning, there are 178 different forum discussions that are out there. So you can find something, hopefully, that interests you. You can search for it. You can take a look and you can get a part. You can get involved into a discussion where you can either reply to someone or have them reply to you and start those conversations. And so a lot of them based around curriculum and curriculum kinds of ideas. What are you doing in your classroom? Sharing of ideas, those kinds of things. And then also just some fun things from time to time of, like, there was an article of the 20 different, I think the top 20 technology ideas that are going to be obsolete by the year 2020, and what those are, and people responding to those discussions and taking a look at those different things. And so it's a way for people to post and talk about different things and share ideas of what they are doing. This is where they've actually asked us to spend most of our time, because this is where the learning takes place, because we can figure out what it is that we have an interest in and have those conversations and start to make connections and start to build some of those relationships with people around the world. Well, in this case, from 6 different states, but a lot of places there, a lot of times it has led us to other links and other things from getting ideas from people around all around the United States and the world. And so the Ning is the main page that we work off of. They've asked us to take about 1 to 2 hours a week of time to be able to sit down. That's tough from a standpoint of just finding the time to be able to do that, and also then looking at going through and reading everybody's responses to something and just kind of taking the time to track things back. Sometimes it's tough to get involved in many different discussions, but a starting point for us. As I mentioned, there are different groups that are made up throughout. There are 39 different groups that are a part of this Ning right now. This PLP network also has other cohorts besides the Dallas-Dublin cohort, and we are all able to see the same information, but we are, when we get together to do our Illuminate sessions, or when we get together to do our meetings and end-of-the-year things. The Dallas Belmont group will be together, and then the other groups are together, but we can see the different groups that are here. And we were on here somewhere, the Churchill team.
There we are.
So, and just to kind of give you an idea here, again, Christina Kellum had posted a, just last week, had posted a video clip for us to take a look at, and so I had taken a look at that, and a couple of our team members, myself and Nikki, had taken a look at it just yesterday, actually, and the rest of the team hasn't had a chance to comment on that yet, but it was so something there that we, another way for us to be able to work. So the Ning is a place that where we spend quite a bit of our time.
Scott, just to clarify this with this tool, because I've used this before too. It's a tool for the Churchill and Franklin teams to see virtually what's going on without having to meet face-to-face so that you can build that conversation. But you obviously you build it from with these other states and these folks as well.
Correct.
So there's really two, at a minimum, there's two layers of this, which is nice.
Correct.
Now, is Whitney, as a team leader, doing anything with this in terms of leading the charge and keeping it active, or...?
She's trying to, right? Yeah, and with the holidays being, I mean, we really had our last midnight session right before winter break, and then coming back after break, and she's been trying to get us fired back up again. And so she has actually been Skyping with our person's called a fellow, the person that kind of helps us and oversees us, and she's been having some conversations with her just to kind of get us started and back up and going again after the break and moving, because the thing that we're going to need to do is our action research identification of what it is we want to work on. So that's our next piece that we're going to need to get together and have that conversation around. So Whitney is the main contact, and then she, in turn, then fires off emails to us or walks around to people and says, hey, you need to, you know, don't forget you need to do this, or we need to work on this, or what do you think about this? And so, again, she was the right person for that because she's got that, she lives in this world quite a bit more than a lot of us, It's been, like I said, a learning experience to even get to know this. But before we can ask our kids to do any of these things,
or to stay up to speed with our kids who are already doing these things,
absolutely.
Right? That too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So,
what was the video clip?
The video clip was it's about 18 minutes in length. That I'd be happy to. It was a clip about
from TEDCA.
Just kind of changes in practice and how 21st century learning skills are changing us and just our practices in terms of what we need to do. And so when I first, my response here was just thinking in terms of when I heard powerful learning practice, you think a lot of times about your instruction in the classroom, but the practice so much is us practicing with these tools and working with these kinds of things as well. And so, and I'd be happy to forward that clip on to anybody to take a look at. There are a lot of, the problem here is there's so much. And how do you filter it down to what's really,
truly
an interest for you? But again, from our standpoint, where we can go in and take a look at the things that have an interest for us to be able to see if there are conversations out there. One of my interests right now is iPads in the classroom. And so I did a search of that and got involved in a conversation to see where other people were, what kinds of things people were doing with that, and I haven't got much of a response yet, but I know that there are things out there to take a look at. And so, video clips can be posted there very easily. So, and I can forward that on to you to take a look at, because it was an interesting video clip to look at.
So is this really a forum for you to understand the social media technologies that are out there?
Mm-hmm.
And I assume some examples of ideas of how you might use it in the classroom?
I think a lot of us thought at first it was going to be, here's how you can take these things, and we haven't gotten to that point yet. The focus right now has been very much on us getting an understanding of these things, not as just tools in themselves, not as a means to an end, but as a means of teaching.
So you're learning about what blogs and Twittering and what those are all about.
Got it.
And then the next step is to say, okay, how can we leverage that
Absolutely.
In the classroom? And where's the global connection? Because to me, one of the things I've talked about before is the power of this to connect globally, which is part of our mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that fit in, given it's Texas and Ohio?
Well, as of right now, it's, I think... again, to learn these tools. But then, as you'll, well, give me a minute, and I'll get there.
Okay.
A blog as well, through the PLP process, is another piece that we have to be able to work with. And this is, again, they set this for us, and we'll post to it as an opportunity to be able to take a look at and to look at different topics that are there. I haven't read this particular one that looks like it was posted yesterday. I haven't had a chance to go through and take a look at this one yet. But again, the blog is there as another way for us to be able to read about people's ideas and share ideas. And again, off of the PLP website that is there, and actually it's just a separate page that I could have gone to off of the name, but it's there for us to be able to look at. So again, blogging is something that we're starting to find. Third, fourth, fifth grade classroom teachers are starting to experiment with it. Actually, Whitney's class in first grade is actually, they're blogging a little bit as well on a very basic level, but starting to get that idea down of how to work with that and what to do with that. And so, again, for us to learn how to use those and get ideas of those particular things. So the bookmarking site of Delicious, which was something that was a new thing for us as well. I don't know what your familiarity is with Delicious and if you're aware of it, but for us, again, I talked about iPads in the classroom was something on January 6th, something that I had seen an interest in. And the thing I like about this is that I can click, obviously, here on this, and I can look. There are eight people who also bookmarked that particular article that I had bookmarked. And so I can go in and I can look at who those people are. And this gentleman in particular, as I don't know James Clark, but when I looked at him, I was able to pull up all of his other... Loading slow here. I can look at all of his ideas of things that he's bookmarked, things that we've either had in common or not, and so you get a lot of different ideas from different people. So here's one possible global participation piece where there could be somebody from, now again, I don't know where James is at, but to be able to start to spread ideas of things that are out there and ideas that are out there and different things that he has posted and he has been willing to share as you're looking at that. And that's just one particular person here. And I haven't done much with the bookmarking. I've been trying to learn this as well as I've kind of worked through it. But again, there are different articles and different things that I have posted to it and tagged to be able to take a look at, to come back in and look at later. All Things PLC, the Professional Learning Community site, is one that I had bookmarked a long time back, and there are 38 people there that are looking at that one. The Buck Institute for Education, project-based learning, looking at that 650. So there are some different sites. So I'm able to get a look at what different people are doing and how different people are, and then the other things that they have interest in. So it kind of increases my knowledge as well. Twitter is another one, which is a new one for us. And Twitter is probably the piece where I've seen it go. I was able to, through Twitter, to be able to start to connect with people who were following me. I was able to look for principals, especially in people that I could connect with. And there was actually one of the principals that I came across today was Twitter had a lot of tweets around teacher evaluation and what she was doing in her classroom and the kinds of things that she was doing and things that she was looking for. And as I was kind of looking through, it was interesting reading. But I was able to also connect with a principal from Australia, who then connected me to a librarian in Australia, who would be a nice person for my media specialist to be able to talk to or to be able to follow and to maybe exchange ideas with. And so from our perspective of global, at least getting those ideas to maybe take it to the classroom level where the kids could do something. So the best I can do for you for global right now, but in terms of expanding our horizons of what's out there and talking to people outside of even just from this one Dublin-Dallas opportunity, been able to take it out and to be able to do expand things and meet a few new people and share some ideas. And so I know there's a little bit of my tweets have been few and far between, but they've been also just based upon things that I've been finding. This particular article was one that I had read about e-readers in the school, and actually the classroom behind you we had a fifth grade student who had just come back after break and had asked a question about, can I bring an e-reader to school? Can I? And so I asked the question, is anyone seeing that out there in their schools? Because, again, kids getting involved in the different style of learning than what we were accustomed to. So Twitter as well is another piece that we're learning about. And obviously YouTube.
Scott?
Yes?
That's the same Twitter that the kids would be using. It's
yes.
The same system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, same system. So, and then obviously the YouTube piece, another one where they actually gave us a flip camera as a school to be able to use as a part of it, and they want the teachers to go in and to tape lessons or to post lessons to YouTube that others would be able to, within the Ning, that we would be able to get to. There's a PLP channel, I guess, through YouTube that you can get at. Again, we haven't done much work with this. We just received the flip cameras right before winter break. But another way to be able to share ideas and share learning that is going on in the classroom and to get ideas from others by watching their video clips. And so the YouTube clip, I don't know, I think I had put a YouTube video on there, just a 3-minute video about 21st century learning and change that I won't put you through right now, but just how information is changing and the things that are, just how we are acquiring information and the ways that our kids are acquiring information that we're trying to obviously keep up with and learn more about, as you said, that they're already out in front of us on in a lot of cases. So. Our action research project either needs to be focused around professional development or instruction, and again, we're going to talk about this as a team and decide what it is we want to do, but it needs to be related to our school improvement goals, and so I'd be happy to come back and share with you at a later date what it is we've decided to go down or what path we've decided to take and how we are going to go down that path. I believe Franklin is still in the planning stages as well as to what they were looking to do with their action research. We do have in the name, we can go in and take a look at other action research that other schools have done and things that they have done in the past to be able to get some ideas or to possibly ask some questions around, but that is a piece that is coming for us down the road here in the coming weeks. And so, and just ending with this quote of recognition and satisfaction stem not only from being a masterful teacher, but also from being a member of a masterful group, and that's what we're hoping to do as a result of this, is to kind of expand our horizons again and learn more about our work together and how we can take that into the classroom and the benefits of our kids to help them become 21st century learners. So.
Thank you, Scott. Now, are there any questions?
Scott, did you get the flip video cameras? Is that a PTA purchase?
No, it was from PLP. PLP Network, actually.
Was PLP Network did it?
For us, yes.
Oh, excellent.
So,
yeah.
They had
the flip video cameras. It was through the network.
So they had purchased those for us, and Whitney's got it in her room. I have to shut
that down. You had to hit it twice or something.
So, there we go. So the flip camera is one that we have here in the building, but they did purchase that for each of the groups.
Yeah.
And so we got one, even though originally we were two teams. We had an intermediate team and a primary team, and then when we started looking at the work, it said it really just kind of made sense to combine into one larger team.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said that was fine, and so we received the one flip camera, and Franklin received one as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think, and Ann said this, but the key to this is managing the overwhelming amount of information that is available. And to any of us that are using social networks for work, or I'm on webinars weekly now with a course that I'm doing, and there's so much immediate feedback that it's hard to get your arms around it to sort through. So it's nice that it's recordable. You can go back to it. And to, to have your team lead really figure out, once you figure out your project, where do we really need to go to get that information? I love Ning. I think it's a great social tool. There's so many layers to it, and it's
wonderful. We talked
about
it here in the building and
yeah.
How people would respond. And the people on the board are the people that I kind of felt were ready to take that step.
Sure.
There are others in the building that I don't think are quite ready to go
right.
There and to even and even the ones that are ready have found it a struggle right now to even try and stay on top of things and stay
yeah.
with it. And so I know that my other staff would would struggle with it a little bit, but it's something that we're working towards. We're trying to get them more comfortable with.
Well, and I was thinking with our Institute Day today that how are we using our, and this is going to sound like I'm making an assumption, so, but it I suppose it is one, our younger professionals who have come into their college prep programs or education programs already advanced and just using this as a matter of course, this is how they process information, all that, and using them as really teacher leaders for some of this as well, and how we
which we did last year when the Institute focused on technology last winter, I think the same date last winter, maybe it was the spring, February, that we did have teacher leaders who were demonstrating their practices and providing models and prototypes to use in the classroom.
That's great. Because I think their excitement, you know, that excitement around it, it does make you feel a little overwhelmed and like you're behind the curve. On the other hand, to know that you have that person to go to, I mean, I think that's the only way I really learned how to use some of this stuff, because I went to a colleague of mine who was really adept at it, and we did a tutorial and sat down, and then you just have to play with it, just like you said.
I think that was the whole point behind the PLP, was to, based on readiness, and as you know, so many things going on in our buildings and so much change that everyone's adapting to, but who was ready and felt that this was a step they could take.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
Scott and Kirk both had created personal goals around increased use of technology, and so they were great targets.
Target would be the word. And nice use of the smart board, Scott. Very nice.
Well, you know, again, not many opportunities to have to use it.
Yeah, it's great.
So although I was saying to Mike that for staff meetings and things, I mean, we finally got the software loaded onto my laptop so that I can be able to use it for other things, because, again, modeling that and demonstrating for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more you use it, the easier it gets. Yeah,
sure.
That's great. Thank you. So
thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Is there any thoughts of leveraging the Mike and the technology group in this pilot in terms of...
Well, Christina is part of the tech...
She's part of the tech. I thought she was like media specialist.
She's an she's an instructional technology specialist.
Mm-hmm. We've got the right...
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move on to the superintendent's report.
Well, I have really only a brief report to synthesize some of the ideas and your responses to the ideas for any structural changes in the board meeting agendas. And I want to thank those of you who provided some feedback to me. So by way of synthesizing, let me just say this. Most of you felt that to rearrange our agenda as a trial, to put discussion at the end of the meeting was certainly something worth trying. That if we were going to do that, however, setting time parameters around those discussion topics was necessary, since there's almost an inherent invitation at the end of the meeting to not be conscious of time, be conscious of efficiency in our conversations. The other suggestion, and I don't want this to sound in any way directly related to what we just experienced, but holding questions during presentations until the end of the presentation was another area that would allow the presenter to get through his or her work and then keep the questions till the end, which would allow us to have a more cohesive conversation around the topic at hand. The suggestion of using a meeting every other month or several times a year that would take the place of finance was believed to be an option only if we had some topic that really needed some conversation and that it would be time we already set aside. For two reasons, I think people felt. One was that 6 o'clock is sometimes a difficult time for some members to make it, and finance has quite a bit on their agendas every other week anyway. Mm-hmm. So that was not a great option. The idea of building into our calendar additional meeting days off the times that we have first and third meetings also was an idea that didn't resonate really strongly with anyone, feeling as if we need to schedule an additional meeting because we need a lengthy time to have a conversation, then we should do so. One suggestion, I think Bob's suggestion around that was board goals. That board goals may be most appropriately scheduled for times other than regular board meetings so that you can have the more lengthy discussions. And I would invite any board member who did give me feedback to help me if I've not captured exactly what you've said. I think that, in summary, board members felt that our meeting agenda serves its purpose. Our structure serves its purpose, and that there are ample times for people to discuss topics. And so the placement of those topics and how we discuss them, how we are conscious of the time that we put to them, and when we bring those topics forward, all of that structure is in place if we use it as it is there for us.
Did we discuss placement of closed session? Would this be happening after closed session? Because sometimes we go into closed session for an hour and a half, and then if we wait for discussion till after that, you know, some people may have wanted to hear a discussion, you know, a topic discussed, but you know, asking them to wait in the hallway for 0 to an hour and a half is, you know, can be difficult.
There are a couple nuances in moving discussion to the end. If we would not move it before, it would still stay before closed session.
Okay.
And then if you have action after closed session, you know, that is related to your closed session conversation. Mm-hmm. The one nuance would be that on occasion, not very often, we have discussion and action in the same board meeting, mm-hmm. either because something is of urgency or something is so perfunctory that we're just taking action in the same meeting, and in which case you would have to do discussion and then action. Mm-hmm. So you've already had action once in your agenda. You'd have to add action again in your agenda. So those are really the only two nuances. But we would not schedule discussion after closed session.
I didn't remember us talking about that, so I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, thank you. So we can try it for a couple board meetings and see if it feels comfortable to put discussion at the end, which would mean we'd really be altering it to everything that we've done up to this point would be the same presentation report. Then I believe my suggestion would be that we would go directly to action items, mm-hmm. then return to superintendent and board reports, mm-hmm. and discussion. To end the meeting.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, you had suggested like our board reports
be submitted on a template.
Right. And I'm wondering if there's a way, I know we do it with LLT and our talking points, mm-hmm. and I know you do that with some of your other groups. It'd be interesting to see if we could, you know, as a suggestion, I mean, maybe it might only be work with PTA Council, because they're a little bit bigger, but you know, I thought that was a really good suggestion because it does help frame mm-hmm. what comes out of those meetings versus us just, you know, regurgitating everything.
Well, and I think then you're submitting, if you plan to give a board report, you're submitting something the evening of the board meeting so that Maureen has a copy of that. I think that helps her as well in terms of pulling together her minutes mm-hmm. and helps frame what you plan to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that helps keep our you know, more efficient
right.
presentation as well. So we can build that template very easily and use it. Basically, is using the model of talking points, summary, you know, whatever.
Well, and I think that's the hard part with PTA meetings is that a lot of it, you know, revolves around the social and some of the positive, you know, programming mm-hmm. that goes on at a school that, you know, just they're sort of highlights.
Well, the other suggestion was only do a PTA council report. Mm-hmm. Whoever that board member is who is responsible for attending PTA Council, because you get somewhat of a summary of each of the PTA's meetings, mm-hmm. What's going on in their buildings, mm-hmm. and then the larger PTA Council. So that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's another option. But I also wouldn't want to prohibit individuals from giving a PTA report because there may have been something unique that occurred mm-hmm. at a PTA meeting.
So are you suggesting for board reports that we have a template we fill out?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with that template? That
It would become a part of the record, and Maureen would use it for her minutes.
So that includes if you have a report to give out, you're going to fill out this template too, or this is for the board report?
I can do it if you'd like to.
I don't need you to do one. I don't know that we need to do one, so that's why I'm asking the question. I mean, is that that's a suggestion that someone gave, or that?
Well, in terms of giving, so that everyone has a chance to decide what they're going to talk about. I wouldn't view it, John, as an assignment. So if you have a board report and you didn't submit it first, that would not prohibit a board member from giving a report. Mm-hmm. It's really an organizer.
The purpose of that is because you got feedback that board reports were taking too long or they weren't to the point?
Inconsistent in terms of the kind of information that was coming forward. I thought of it in particular related to both finance and policy, that it would allow those two groups mm-hmm. to give an articulated report from their committee meetings as they meet.
And I thought part of that discussion when we were talking about it, I thought part of it was it'd be nice if we had, I don't know if you want to call it a template, but when we attend the PTA meetings, that we had something that we all talked from, so we made sure we covered everything. Was that just in my imagination, or was that part of the discussion?
You mean talking points that we, like kind of the board highlights, what's going on for
the board?
Well,
that's where I thought this discussion went last time we got together, was to say...
No,
I don't think so. But that can be provided to you, and we could do it regularly if you want after a board meeting. Julie does board highlights, and she has offered to do...
The board highlights are the tool that I use when I have a PTA meeting, mm-hmm. and then in addition to that, anything specifically from finance or policy that is coming up or is germane to the conversation. So we already have that set of talking points from Julie. She does all the work for us. So if we're not using that, then we're making more work for ourselves. I think this conversation around the board reports, and this is a conversation from actually even 2 years ago, was that there was a lack of continuity or consistency among board members, and this was a comment that I brought to the table because when I would do my rotation through PTAs, and maybe some other folks have heard this too, then the PTA president, if they came to the board meeting, would show up and they would hear a report from one board member and then another report from another board member, and they were very different, not really hitting the high points or the key issues for that particular PTA, kind of missing the boat. And so this got brought up, I think, even I would say a year or two ago. So.
Yeah, which that's the issue I thought was more the relevant issue was mm-hmm. if you use board highlights, I don't know if everyone does that, but mm-hmm. I don't know if it's outdated by the time you have a PTA meeting. But
you get board highlights.
Like figure out how long has it been since the last PTA meeting, and then you got to kind of read all the board highlights since then.
Right.
Because you're assuming that the board member before you hit on everything up to that point.
Mm-hmm. And I know that, Julie is always going to be more than happy to help summarize or capture for you if that's something that's helpful to you.
And there have been times when I know Drew's done this, I think I've done this in the past, have gone to Julie to say, this is a key issue for this particular PTA, or I will ask the PTA president, or I have CERC now, are there any key issues that you want the board to respond to? And if it's something that I think I need a better set of information on, then I would go to Julie. So I think it's just asking the question and figuring out what we need to fill in the blanks on.
Well, you have, and the other guys can say whether they think it'd be useful to have something mm-hmm. that we,
I'd almost
five or key things that we make sure we talk about at all PTAs, so there's at least a consistency.
That's what I was going to say. I'd almost rather have a template on what are we supposed to do at the PTA meetings.
Mm-hmm.
What should we hit on? Should it just be board action? Can we talk about discussions? Because my Forest Glen meeting the other day, I talked about board action since December,
mm-hmm.
and then started talking a bit about the finance committee and the our master facilities plans discussions. Well, that's not board level action, but it's something that's going mm-hmm. on at the board level. So, or at least committee at the board level, and obviously people are interested in that topic, so there was a discussion around that. But do we need to be consistent on what we present or what we're not presenting at the PTA level.
Well, two things. One, John, I remember when we first came on the board, Julie had, and I don't remember what we called it, but it was like talking point. Yeah, I mean, it was like news, but where we received something that was consistent for every board member had it, and so these were your general talking points. Probably, you know, you and I and maybe Kevin, because we were new at the time, we were the only ones who used it. Everybody did something different. That was prior to us rotating through the PTAs. And I don't know, I think we probably just said, Jules, we don't need this anymore, we're all doing okay. Now that we have board highlights and the more consistency, we probably stop using it. But maybe that would be helpful for some board members, because I know I've heard that, it's not a complaint, but that comment at PTA meetings where it's like, you know, so-and-so was here last time and, you know, you've given us more information or less information, or we, mm-hmm. you know, we don't know. And I think all of us, we're never quite sure what to say. So like Eric said, you go to the PTA president, are there any topics that you want mm-hmm. us to make sure that we discuss or have more information? And I do think each PTA is different. What mm-hmm. that building needs and the types of information is different. I would hope that maybe I viewed this suggestion about a template and talking points kind of both ways. One, we have the same consistent four or five talking points as a board to bring to the PTAs, and then if there's additional information they want, we can give it, but that we at least all made sure we hit these four or five topics at every place we went. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that was that every PTA meeting, we as a board highlighted to our fellow board members and to our community the four or five things that are occurring in that building and the highlights of that PTA meeting in that building.
Or a committee report.
Or a committee report. And I was thinking more committee report because I know Eric and Dan, you know, we're working on X, Y, and Z or finance. I think I viewed it more as a finance issue because LLT, I come with my four talking points and just give a brief discussion. Steve does the same thing for CIT. But with finance, you guys have either just met or there's so much going on, and if we can't get there, it helps.
That's the difficulty I was foreseeing with a template. When do I fill it out? Between 7:25 and 7:30? You know what I mean? It, or else it's going to be 2 weeks delayed, and at that
right.
point... But,
yeah,
know,
to me, I don't...
Well,
what's
maybe
the
it's
point?
Just
that's
you
I don't
thinking
see
about what the couple highlights, you know, okay, we talked about X, Y, and Z. I mean, you could even look at the agenda, and while... You'd look at an agenda and say, okay, well, we covered, you know, these topics. It's, I know some of it kind of just rolls right into our board meeting because they end up becoming discussion mm-hmm. items anyway.
And a lot of what we talk about is
right, but it can
right
also
before
be,
we discuss it.
Right, and it could also be a highlight, agenda. A suggestion of, you know, this is coming down, you know, we started this discussion on, you know, our auditor. I mean, it's here we're talking about, but that's mm-hmm. something you guys have been discussing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Even the budgeting process, you know, hey, yeah, we talked about the budget. And just kind of, hey, it's out there, we've had this discussion. Not really looking for discussion from us, just reminding us that it's going on. Because I think, again, particularly with finance, the erroneous assumption is that, you know, we woke up one morning and started talking about something and then took action. And instead, it's been something that's been on the books and on every agenda for the past 4 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And just that it's unhighlighted.
So what I'm hearing, I believe, is no template for your reports, but that we should provide you with talking points to take to the meetings in which you're representing the board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing I was going to say is for the finance committee, I mean, I think it'd be fairly easy since there are two members. One of them, you guys could alternate, you know, one... Just saying, here are the four or five key points that come out of the finance committee that we should give to you to say to put in our template for the PTA meetings. In addition to you providing us with some other talking points that we could cover, I'm just saying that probably be fairly easy during the meeting to say here are four bullet points, and then say, oh, let's make sure that or it could be two of them, whatever the topic is. To make sure we cover that in the PTA meetings. And then same with LLT, Tara, right? I mean, you're there. You could
We come up with them when we leave LLT. There's usually 4 talking points. I mean,
yeah, and then just submit those, and then at least then we have LLT covered, and we have finance covered.
I do that already.
Whatever the other 4 or 5 talking points are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If that,
I don't think we need it to report out in our conversation. But
in what conversation?
In this conversation.
When you're doing your board reports.
Yeah, I mean that.
In other words, we don't need a template to build a board report to report out.
Right. That's okay. What I'm hearing.
All right. And I don't, I'm fine with that, but what I would like to say is that we all then need to be, personally responsible for, regardless of whether there's 8 people here, 20 people here, it's a recorded meeting. People may download it to hear it. I would want our PTAs and our committees to know that we gave, as accurate a report out as possible, and we didn't give it short shrift, because those are key leaders within the district, and I think deserves a good report out. So
balanced by concise,
right?
Being concise,
right.
And not recapturing probably every detail of that meeting.
Right. High points.
Okay. Well, we will. We'll look to find some way of providing, following a board meeting, something short and sweet for you to use at other meetings that you may be in attendance and required.
I mean,
and we'll make one.
That's already available, though. I mean, I get that from Julie from every meeting. It's that
the board highlights.
I call her and say I'm going to this PTA. Could you give me some talking points? And it works wonderfully, and it's.
But we don't do that for every board member,
because we don't.
The timing thing is one of the issues that.
Yeah, it's also.
That kind of derailed it before.
Mm-hmm.
That
old news.
Oh, for some it's fresh news, and for some it's so.
Well, that's our responsibility, is to, like Bob was saying, look at the date. Look at the board highlights. There may be things that got missed because PTA meetings are sometimes every other month. And also, don't assume that your PTA members, even leaders, are reading the board highlights. So it could be information that is, fresh to them, and that we want to. I always refer back to the website to say, please use this information. It's, really helpful for your PTA members and for them to know what's going on. So I would say that's my base.
Is the timing that different for each of the PTA meetings?
Are
they all like the first meetings in January, the second one?
Well, they're not every month.
Not every month, right.
That's what I'm saying. The first one's in January, so for the January meetings have the 4 or 5 talking points, and then for the March have...
Right, but you may not... A PTA may not meet in January. They may not meet to the beginning of February. So early January talking points might be outdated or not something that... Mm-hmm. But I think if you give us just a chance to think about it, a template and something that could be structured where we just have to fill in the blanks, so to speak.
I wouldn't worry about outdated. I mean, if it's outdated, the school year ended, we'll know that, right? I mean,
well, and I want to create something that's user-friendly for you and not time-intensive
for you guys, right?
For staff, that's beyond what we already do to communicate with you and the public about what's happening. So we'll work on that. We'll give a couple meetings of moving the agenda, reversing the agenda, and see how we perform on that. And just would offer one other thing. The book that Scott referenced, 21st Century Skills, I do have that book in my office. If you're interested in a copy, I would be happy to give you one.
And I actually have a board copy that...
you got from the conference.
That I got from the conference. So
but I have some additional, and I have some additional copies, so if you're interested.
And in terms of changing the agenda, are we gonna do it once and then...
I think we should do it twice.
We'll do it twice?
Twice and then talk about it.
Okay.
We'll do it for our February meetings and then decide whether or not
it's... So it's really a change in the agenda, not a change in the structure of the way the meeting...
Correct. It's just a change in the order.
The feedback you got is nobody really cares about the way the tables are set up or... You remember part of it?
No.
Yeah,
okay. I did not.
Okay.
We'll move on to board reports. Are there any members of the board who wish to give a report at this time?
I don't think I have a report, but this is what I had talked about before, was the policy. was a handout from the class that I had taken for the session at IASB. So thank you for making copies for everyone.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
I attended the Forest Glen PTA meeting, but I was only able to basically be there for my spiel. So I kind of gave them an update. Their meeting, they hadn't met since, I think, early December, so kind of gave an update on what we'd done since then. And got into a little bit, like I said earlier, about what Finance Committee's been studying and what options we were looking at that point. So there was a little Q&A around those concepts, but obviously I explained that this is a Finance Committee recommendation to the whole board, and there's a whole bunch of next steps before anything, you know, super serious happens. So. Mm-hmm. And then at Finance Committee today, we didn't have much, I guess, non-MFP items. We talked about student fees for a little bit, which will be coming forward to the board, I believe, next meeting for discussion. And then in the master facilities plan discussions, we went over the draft text of the report and its contents and discussed language, made some corrections and things along those lines. So that's kind of a work in progress, but that's really what we centered on today. Next meeting, at our next finance meeting concerning master's facilities plans, we'll be looking at Spalding and some work that FGM has done around what could go on that plot of land. And we'll have some discussions about whether that's a viable alternative still, or whether we want to retain it or delete it. And then we'll be looking at the final report for the last meeting in February.
So we have delayed our report by one board meeting so that we can meet with FGM. We would invite other board members if they can attend next meeting at 6 o'clock.
Is that February 7th?
That is for the FGM presentation of the test fit on Spalding.
It's just Monday, Bob, are you done?
Yeah, that's a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's
okay.
Okay. Yep. So February 7th at 6 p.m. still, right? 6 p.m.?
Correct.
Yep.
Correct,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just want to make a note. I think it was because CERC didn't have a location for this, but on our events in progress, I do have a CERC meeting, which is the Special Education Resource Committee, at Ben Franklin on this coming Thursday night. So I just want to put that on the record that they are meeting.
Do you know, is that just a regular meeting, or do they have a speaker or anything?
It's just a regular meeting. It's kind of a kickoff for the year.
Okay.
So, and no requests from board of specific things, just to be present.
Okay. No other board reports? We'll move on to discussion items.
Our first discussion item is a topic that we bring to you every year, and that is our class size targets for next year. And we have, they're presented, we're recommending no change, both in the targets or the process by which we could ask for additional sections should they be warranted based on risk factors, performance factors at any of our individual schools. A request came in earlier this weekend, I think yesterday, from Dan around what are our current class size averages at Hadley. We haven't provided you with any of our average class size information at this time, because we usually do that around the staffing. But in answer to that question, our overall class size average in the core classes alone at Hadley is 24.81, and that fluctuates between almost 27 down to 23. I would mention that both in math and in literacy, reaching that class size target is a little bit more difficult for literacy because of the double block, for math because of the leveling of math. And so you have some classes that are at 32, mm-hmm. and you have some classes that are at 16.
Mm-hmm.
And the same would be true with our exploratory, where it fluctuates a little bit. But last year, we increased how close we came to our targets by two full students. I think last year our average was about 22.3. So we have staffed a little closer to targets this year than previous years. But it's always a numbers game for them.
Well, there's
but
more to it than just divvying out bodies.
Right, yeah. Right. But does that help at least preliminarily answer the question? It's not full detail, but it gives us our core in those grades and in each of the individual grade levels. Sixth grade hovers at around 20, almost 24. Seventh grade is a little higher, I'd say, at about 24.8. And eighth grade is around 26, I'd say. So over each grade level is a little different, and then the core classes are a little different.
Yeah, so when you, sorry.
I was just, the other, I kind of asked that in similar question mm-hmm. about the portables, and I was just curious because.
Oh, the portables. We didn't do the portables.
It was late sick, and I was able to sit down with me and do it, and I forgot about the part of the question.
It was just I was just curious if. Because I know some of the cores are taught in the and those mobiles. I didn't know if there should be some philosophy around keeping the core in the building and exploratories in the mobiles. And I didn't know if there's different capacity sizes.
Well, some exploratories have equipment issues that would prohibit them from being in the portables. And
what's out there? Math and literacy, right?
And I think there's a couple social science classes mm-hmm. out there.
But it's eighth grade predominantly. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I don't even know if
there's usually some thinking around who will be in the portables and for what reasons. But we don't exclude a particular group from being in the portables. Not like the core would not necessarily be excluded. And in fact, if you could get a kind of a eighth grade group out there, that's perceived as positive.
And I guess you could look at it the other way. If it's a longer block, then that means less transport back and forth between the portables. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When we first put the fourplex out there and we were actually still in the teaming concept, we actually had a social studies, language arts, math,
team.
And what do you got?
Science.
Well, math would have been probably.
But science for that team was, and then gym was there because then the students basically cycled around there, came in for lunch and gym and sciences because we couldn't put science on there. It was one of the ways that we started off with, and then having a
six-pack
is kind of...
Well, and we don't team that way anymore.
And we don't team that way.
We're departmentalized. So we'll have a block of literacy or a block of math out there, but...
And really, the diversity with different... I mean, I'm assuming with each child's schedule, I mean, the diversity of the classes that the kids are taking, I don't know how logistically you could... do that where a child was out in the portable all day. I mean, I just don't...
No. I don't think we would want that.
Right.
But thank you for the questions. So, any other questions on the class size targets?
Yeah, these averages, do they include pullouts or... if you say it's 24, but you bring two kids into a class...
If they're assigned to the homeroom. So, in other words, a student may receive ESL services in a pullout model... But the homeroom is the assigned teacher, which would be the model.
So these averages
teachers.
Are based off of the homeroom?
Correct.
Right. They're based off the fact that those 26 students are assigned to that teacher for that course.
Mm-hmm.
And would the way we do pullouts mean that those numbers tend to go up a little bit or down a little bit?
Down a little bit.
Okay.
So when you're pulling those students out of the class, then there are fewer students in the classroom.
But aren't you bringing some kids in from...
No.
They would be on the enrollment.
They would be in the
enrollment. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in our, if you're talking about like the ELL pullouts,
mm-hmm.
they actually are scheduled classes over here that mm-hmm. are not part of these numbers.
Not part of
these.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you get into the junior high type scheduling, there really isn't any pullouts because that student has that class
scheduled for a class.
Schedule, mm-hmm. on their schedule. It's a separate class for them.
So, one of the criteria here is, a grade level being significantly below the norm. You also mentioned 32 kids in some classes. I mean, is that acceptable?
We don't have 32 students in any of our elementary classrooms. But sometimes at Hadley there will be a class just based on, the dynamics of a complex schedule will result in some classes. We don't like them being over 30. but it on occasion will happen. Just as we don't like to see a class fall below 20, but on occasion that will happen.
And is that literally because of scheduling? Like I know a math class last year that was fairly small, but I thought it was more because they were in the advanced mm-hmm. math.
Geometry could be small. We could have a gifted class that's smaller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just so because of the number of students who qualified.
The blocking is good.
Yeah. And but those are what I would refer to as singletons. You know, they're going to be the exception. But every once in a while, just based on the way the student schedules are available, that's one of the things that the junior high schedulers work on constantly, is balancing the classes. But that's a challenge in any secondary environment where you've got more than one class offering for students. I mean, they're just it's a balancing act.
So we still think the 25 to 27, and because we raised these a few years ago.
No, not since I've been here.
Well, okay, 5 years ago, whatever, 4 years ago, whatever. A year before you came, we raised these a couple.
Okay.
At least I thought we did.
This is my fifth year.
I don't really think we did.
I think these have been like this.
We were established in 2005.
Okay. So we still think these are the right numbers, and 26 to 28 for 6 to 8 and 25 mm-hmm. to 27 makes sense.
Yes, and as you see, our actual averages are a little lower than that.
Right.
So it's difficult to we try to stay within that target, and I think they are reasonable. We also have written in here that there are ways in which there may be an exception, mm-hmm. not to mention just the way the numbers fall. You know, when you're scheduling 90 students at an elementary school, you're going to have low class sizes because 90 students, you're not going to have three sections of 30.
Mm-hmm. Tara, do you remember changing these at all, or was it that we established them for the first time?
I think we established them. Okay. I think that's what it was, mm-hmm. John, because no, I don't okay. think, I mean, we, I don't, I think it was that's what it was, John. I think we established,
them for the first time.
Yeah.
Because when I came here, there was a class size that they staffed to, but I believe it was the next administration that kind of like put the targets and the ranges actually into a practice.
Right, right, more of a policy procedure type of a thing.
Oh, written practice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on that?
Not on that per se, but it brought up a question maybe that for next time, and that is, did our software at Hadley ever, did we ever fix the issues surrounding class scheduling yet?
No, we did not, but we are currently looking at new software mm-hmm. Programs and plan to bring a recommendation before the end of the school year for a new program.
Mm-hmm. But, and is it safe to say, I mean, they have to start scheduling?
It's safe to say that this year they'll be probably hand scheduling unless we can work something out with a vendor that is going to be recommended and that the board would support that we are able to have some special arrangement. And what I asked, Mike and I talked about it, whether that's even feasible, we don't know. But if we can work that out and the board would be amenable to that, we could get a separate server or something temporarily in order to get all the data transported over to that and get things going. And I think we're finishing up our process next week.
Right. And just as an anecdotal piece, it was 2 summers ago when we went to the 15-minute, right? So it was the first summer that you guys were down in the bowels of the administration building doing the hand scheduling. And I happened to be over there for something and had a chance to peek in. And it certainly is an eye-opener. So if there's an opportunity,
yeah. And it's
not
much
that we
easier.
Would want to be involved.
It's much easier.
Let's get the flip videos involved.
It's much easier
Just a
now.
Good reality check.
It is easier. That first year was horrific. They built the beta schedule. We've made changes to the schedule for next year that I think will make scheduling easier as well. And so mm-hmm. We're going to be pairing classes so that there'll be more. Some classes will be built on a quarter rather than AB. So it'll be a combination of AB and quarter, straight quarter classes. Mm-hmm. And so
yeah, and my comment was more of a kudos
iteration.
For surviving that than
But it was easier year two, and it was easier last summer. So once we get a good software system that can schedule at 80%, we'll be happy.
Okay.
Next item, may I?
Yeah, sure.
Next item is a request for auditor services. As you, as the board indicated, we discussed earlier this year that this was a good year for us to go out to bid and see what other auditing services were out there. Drew worked with Phyllis and Bob on developing criteria for auditors and conducted their interviews in December, and are making a recommendation to you that we retain Baker Tilly as being the best auditing services available to us, and the cost of that over a three-year period is presented to you.
Yeah, we discussed this, I think, for a couple weeks, right?
We discussed it in finance for 2 weeks. We've discussed it here. I did receive a couple questions from Dan about the auditing services. One of them was relative to length of time. What were there any laws regulating the number of years we could be with a particular auditing firm? And there are none. One of the things we like in particular about Baker Tilly is that they have the capacity, based on their size, to continue to rotate their lead auditors with us, which gives that internal protection, prevents too cozy of a relationship to be built, and then their extensive work and knowledge of the educational sector.
Yeah. And in general, I mean, the cost is
similar.
Is right. Well, once you screen out some of the other respondees who I think Bob and Drew and Phyllis felt didn't have enough firepower and enough experience.
Well, just even the numbers of clients in this sector and then employees to, again, provide that kind of rotating service. Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand the larger cost discrepancy and just looking at some of the criteria. I was just curious, you know, like you talk about internal training and some of the things that bring to the table. You know, if you looked at one of these other lower cost options and then factored in the cost of that training, I mean, is that what we're seeing here, why Baker Tilly is so much more expensive than Klein Hall? Or maybe it's because they're larger.
Klein Hall was eliminated because of its size.
I guess, yeah, I was just trying to understand my experience with a smaller company, you're less likely to fall through the cracks. That's just my experience. And so, personalized service. So, I'd just be curious to understand that a little bit.
Drew, go ahead.
You know, again, with auditing services, the key area is what is the level of independence? And you just can't get the level of independence with the rotations. You know, with an audit, you know, not only is the auditing team comes out, does the field work, but you need to have an independent auditor of the same level of as at least the lead auditor or the partner in the engagement review that audit. And to be able to have that level of independence as the audits are rotated year over year, you really need that firepower. There was really two options. It was the Miller Cooper option and Baker Tilly. The other three really did not have the, number one, the auditing firepower and the depth and breadth in terms of the independence factor to be an effective auditor for us. So really, at that point, then we're looking at two firms that are basically on par in terms of cost. Actually, I think Miller Cooper's was a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So then the question is of moving just for the sake of moving, you do have a disruption factor, and so that was kind of the thought process that went into the analysis.
And I suppose past experience, I mean, we've been pleased with the results of the work we've gotten from Baker Tilly.
Mm-hmm. They've been very timely. They again, they have the auditing firepower. You know, in the banking world, it's all about having the right auditor for the engagement. I'm all for savings of money if it makes sense, but I think it doesn't make sense to skimp on auditing service if we're not getting an apples to apples comparison.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. And then you kind of just now touched on the timing. You talked about the rotation. That's what I was trying to remember. What is the rotation? It can't be the same team.
Is that
just our internal requirement, or is that
that's a practice in the field that you don't have your team stay in place for longer than, I think we've had maybe the same team 2 years in a row, and then they'll change the field leader. You know, the field leader may be the same person 2 years in a row, but the team is different, and so they keep changing their members, and they can because they're a larger firm, which is really helpful to us too. We get fresh perspective then continuously. And you did ask also the question, how long has it been since? And Baker Tilly has been under three different umbrellas. Gurry was the first, then Virchow Krauss, now Baker Tilly. And our records would indicate Gurry became the auditor in 1995. So about 15 years, which I think is what I said without looking. Next item for discussion is the Glenbard Associate Property Tax Appeals Cooperative, the intergovernmental agreement, and this is a discussion item. I've received a variety of questions and comments today, and I probably would ask that you raise those questions. Hopefully for those of you who have sent me emails, I was able to answer them for you. But they may be questions that are relevant for our discussion and whether or not you want to have any alterations to this agreement suggested to the cooperative prior to action the end of the month.
Well, the only question, and it was addressed in the discussion items that I had from the last time, and we had talked about it, was the idea of residential versus commercial property. And as Ann has put in our statement under letter C, the last sentence reads, the district only considers appeals of commercial property. And that's built into this agreement. So, certainly that was a question that came to the table for me, and it's been responded to.
Yeah, it was definitely in our note, and it is in the agreement.
It is not stated in the agreement.
It's not stated specifically in the agreement, but it was in the note in the...
What is stated, there were two questions I think are, one is residential, does it need to be explicit? And as Phyllis did a little work on this today, the point that is worth noting is that unless a property is reduced by $100,000 in its assessed valuation, mm-hmm. It won't even go to the appeals board. And so that's, for most residential property, that's not likely. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have to have a very, very expensive piece of personal property, or residential property, excuse me, for that to even occur. And whether or not we want to prohibit ourselves in that circumstance from doing an appeal should we want to, I don't know if you want to do that. But it's just not, one, we wouldn't even know.
So if a $5 million home gets reevaluated to $4.7 million, then that would be a candidate.
Perhaps. I mean, it could
but
be.
But I mean, that meets your
It would have to be a drop.
That we would be notified of that.
Yeah.
Now, whether we chose to go forward with that is obviously a discussion, but mm-hmm. A home that's, you know, of lesser value would not likely come before the PTAB.
Right.
And the firm that put the agreement together, did they do that for Glenbard?
They did it for all of the school districts in this consortium. So, but if you're the Franzik is the law firm that put this agreement together, And they did it on behalf of all of the school districts who are interested in looking at a consortium.
I mean, I'm almost thinking maybe we should have our partner at Francic look at it.
Oh, he has looked at it.
They wrote it, Drew. That's what I think. That's
well, Aris Dalianis, who is a partner at Francic, wrote it. Todd has reviewed it.
Oh, so Todd has
reviewed
this and given his blessing.
And Drew, the thing about that with the firm, with Forensic, is that there's a different partner or a different associate that has a specialty in a different area. So while while our district uses that firm, and we have different attorneys that do different things. Aris handles most of the tax, and Todd does some more of the labor employment or some, different types of relationship. But I had the same kind of question at first initially, who did it, and then it dawned on me.
And anything that you will take action on, Todd will have seen.
Okay.
He manages us.
Okay. The other...
He's the subject matter expert.
Were you going to talk about the email that the board received about...
I don't have it point by point here, so I couldn't respond to it point by point.
That was one of them was commercially. So, I mean, how do you guys, we're saying that we wouldn't go after non-commercial property. I think that's what we said, and then we just kind of went to it would be unlikely.
We wouldn't hear about it unless it was.
But does anybody think that we should, if we're willing to say we wouldn't go after anything but commercial property, putting in the agreement or not?
And in talking with the with District 87 today, the consortia itself will come up with bylaws, and that's a likely place where that particular topic would come up is in the bylaws.
I was going to say my question in response to the email that came through is that we have 7 partners total in here. And so my understanding is that once this agreement is approved, then when we all approve this as a set of individuals coming to consortia, then that next step is to identify what covenant or bylaw we would agree to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first step, and then there's a second step.
Mm-hmm. The other piece that Bob raised in a prior discussion was are we obligated to go forward with an appeal, even if we don't want to, even if it affects us, but we don't want to? And the language here is somewhat nebulous here, and I think we need to go back and get that clarified, that we have the right not to proceed with an appeal, or if, in fact, by joining the consortia, we are bound to pay the cost of the appeal simply because we will benefit from the outcome or we'll be affected by the outcome.
Mm-hmm. And I had the same kind of question, is if we decide, we don't want to participate in that appeal, thus we do not feel, thus we should not be obligated to pay for services at that time. However, if the other group goes forward and they win and we receive a financial benefit, mm-hmm. then we would be required thus to mm-hmm. pay. But I would be, I guess, that's a question to be asked, but also then that it allows people to decide, are you in or you out before. I'm not sure if I like that, because I feel that somebody could say, I'm not going to participate, but I bet we're going to win, and then I'll pay, versus taking the risk of we might lose, and I'm going to have to be on the hook for part of the cost.
I think we need clarification on what that means for you.
That's paragraph B under 4.
That's correct. Right? Mm-hmm.
But the other one that caught my attention, too, that is related is item C under 2, method.
Correct.
And so those two, they're not inconsistent, I think, but that's where the kind of the nebulousness.
Well, C indicates that if you are not affected by this appeal, you are not participating.
You don't get to plan strategy, right?
Now, this, in many ways, this really just puts into written agreement what we've been doing for many years. Mm-hmm. That when we have a tax appeal, that we're going to move forward and other districts are impacted, we typically go together on the appeal because it just makes more sense.
So it hasn't been that we've gone individually, which drove this. This is the way we've been doing it.
And many districts entering into these kinds of consortiums.
So I'm not sure what we're going to be voting on the 7th, because what I thought we had outlined the rules of engagement, and I'm hearing we have in some rules of engagement, such as how you share the portion of the expense. But I just don't know what we've agreed to in terms of the rules of engagement and what is still left for this group to discuss. And then I just start to see, with so many districts involved, will this really be more efficient? I don't know, but...
Well, it's really, it's always only going to be two districts that are involved in any intervention. It's going to be 87 and us, or 87 and Queen Bee, or 87 and Marquardt. It's going to be only two districts involved on any particular intervention. The only thing I wanted to know is whether we can be dragged into something by 87. Who is the chair of
this
cooperative? Right, 87
does something, we have to go.
Right, that's the question.
That's the automatic question. Right.
Other than that, I mean, it doesn't give us any new powers or take away any powers other than the question of can we not intervene if we don't want to, but 87 does.
Right.
Well, I mean, related to the powers, though, I'm just curious, because usually the school board, the board votes or gives authorization to move forward with the appeal.
No. It's not, that's not, you sign a resolution to engage an intervention, which the one you will approve tonight or not approve, you will take action on tonight, will take us for several years, like the previous one did. So really it's an administrative function to move forward with an appeal or not to move forward with an appeal. And we would inform you of our thinking at that time, but it's really more of an administrative function.
But if we don't approve it, then you don't move forward.
Well, right.
So that's what I'm trying to say.
But you don't take action. We don't bring those to you as an action item on an agenda.
Like one by one, we don't say, okay, property A here, property B here, which one do you want to do? That's not
because we typically
saw.
Yeah, we typically don't appeal the many, many, many that come in. We don't do anything with. It's only when they, you know, go to PTAB or they reach a certain level of.
So, like the one tonight, it's the first one I've heard of.
That's at the level of review at the state.
Okay, and so, well, the district hasn't taken action on any. I guess we'll say during my term.
Correct.
Except for this one, what you're asking for.
We're asking for the ability to have an intervention by our attorney, which we need. In order to have a representative, you have to sign a resolution for that, but you don't have to approve whether or not we go forward with the actual appeal.
So that's what I'm trying to understand is, with this agreement in place, do we still authorize you to get the representative?
No, that's what you're agreeing to do.
So the cooperative.
The cooperative.
Do it for you. I guess that's just one. I'm just concerned with that, the removal of that.
Why, Dan?
Just because I think that it's something that we need to discuss. It's one of our board duties. And so whenever you give it away to this other consortium, and especially now, the way I understand this, the funds for the appeal are based on the tax rate, and we're of 41 to 87, the biggest...
Right.
We'd be the biggest funder of those appeals. So now you're taking that out of our hands.
But we're not funding somebody else's appeal.
No, but we would fund this appeal.
Based on that ratio.
Based on that ratio.
If it's affecting us.
Which we do now. If we go together on an appeal.
Right.
There is an agreement.
Mm-hmm. But on each individual appeal, I guess the question of you, what powers does... I mean, when it comes to strategy, et cetera, you know, it says that the two districts will determine strategy, but how... Okay, suppose the districts have two different ideas of how to go about...
It's really not that complicated. I mean, the process is complicated, but it really, whether you're not going to really disagree on a strategy, it's that piece of it is probably not that complex. But we want the expertise of someone representing us rather than us doing it on our own.
And I hear what you're saying about giving away an authority that we potentially have. I guess I look at it as we're already doing this. We already appeal if it's necessary. To me, I almost look at it as a cost-saving measure in that rather than pay two lawyers to do the same job, we're paying one lawyer to do the same job. Mm-hmm. We're all going for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to duplicate the work?
But we're already doing that.
So,
well, that, and that's the way we do it now. We're already duplicated, and here's a more efficient way.
On an individual basis, case by case.
I mean, I almost look at it, it's not a class action, but you know, I think of it legally as it's somewhat of a class. It's the same thing that we're saying.
So and I mean, I'm just trying to understand because there's some messages that can be interpreted here, right? For me, if we're only going to do this with 87. Right.
What's the point of that?
What's the point of 15, 16, 41, 44? If we're already doing it with them and we're already sharing the cost, why wouldn't we just agree with them that when it comes to these things, we would do this? And it seems to me, and I'm just asking, that we're giving up control to 87 with this agreement. We're saying, okay, you guys are going to chair this, you're going to lead it, and now there are other voices on. It sounds like what consultants we're going to hire, what attorneys we're going to hire. Now, I know that an mm-hmm. action will only result in the two of us, but if this committee gets together and says, here's the attorney we're going to use, and I don't know, because mm-hmm. I don't know what rules and engagements they have, right? If they say, when will we do an 89, or, you know, an 87-41, it'll be this attorney, this consultant. When we do a 89-41, it'll be, I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't know. It just seems to me that we're giving someone now some more authority than we would have in the past, and maybe that's not the case. Maybe 87 always took the lead, and I don't know. You know, I guess that's what I'm asking. Because we say we're doing this today, but are we really doing it this way?
Well, I think it's because we've shared the same attorneys.
It's not been an issue.
It's not been an issue. So if attorneys change and they use another firm, and that attorney becomes their tax attorney, or some districts simply hire a tax attorney different from their general counsel. Certainly, that could change, and that would be an mm-hmm. issue of discussion. I don't know if it would be an issue of concern for us particularly, mm-hmm. but what we're agreeing to is representation.
Yeah, and I guess it may not be a concern, right? But it could be that we're getting a better discount because we're using the same firm over a course of time for other matters, that we get a better rate. I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to.
I
don't know that we could get an answer to that.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's some assumptions about what would happen in the future if you had a different firm.
So what's the purpose of entering in with these other districts if it's never going to happen? I mean, is there any?
Well, it's happening right now. We're engaging in an appeal right now, which you'll be taking action
on.
No,
I understand that. I'm saying with 15, 16.
Right.
It's possible that there could be something that would engage across the districts from an appeal perspective. I don't know. I mean, I to say that it would never happen, I don't think is possible.
Coming from the standpoint of having one intergovernmental agreement that covers the same concept, where there would be a partnership with 87.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we have any overlapping properties. I was talking to Aris. He's like, I don't believe you have no property that overlaps with 16 or 15 or anybody else. Nobody mm-hmm. does have that. I think it's just, and it may be coming from 87's point of view, is like, let's get one IGA. All the business managers agree, yeah, this is a good idea because we do it anyway, so let's formalize it. And so create one intergovernmental agreement instead of having 87 have to have five different agreements.
Right.
Because you have to have a resolution. But you're right, it's being driven by 87.
Right. So it sounds like the big change is, all right, there's some more structure around it, but mm-hmm. we're giving them the chair to mm-hmm. do this. There is very little risk. I mean, within 30 days, we can pull out.
Right.
I mean, so from that perspective, there's little risk. I don't know. I guess you guys feel there's zero risk, because I don't know why we would say, okay, 87, take the chair. I mean,
we're... there's a kind of an underlying conversation that I want to lift up, and that is there's a kind of a comment not being made here that this type of thing is potentially detrimental because it's these intergovernmental agreement coming together, and now it's, it seems more powerful in a negative way. And maybe I'm overstating that, but the email we received today, I think, suggests that, and that there's something negative about forming this collaborative. The way I understood it when you first approached this is that this is a practice we already have in place. One of the values in this and that is that it formalizes the structure, which I think as a practice is important. Mm-hmm. There is a sense of we are in this together and we are trying to accomplish the same ultimate goal when we go to appeal. And then finally, to Tara's point earlier, and Ann, you brought this up before this meeting, there is a cost savings, which I think is elemental to the idea of forming. It makes sense to me. So I don't see this as this kind of circling of the wagons in a negative way where we're pushing out board voice. I see this as formalizing a structure that's already in place, i.e., if this had never come to us, we'd be doing this anyway.
Similar. There is more structure to this.
Right.
But I would agree that with both what you said and John, that we don't view this as having high risk or any risk for us. That it's not that sort of agreement.
I don't see this as a cost savings. There's nothing in here.
It's probably going to be relatively neutral for us. Right. It may be more of a cost savings for other districts who haven't been engaged in that because they have other attorneys.
Because we're using the same data. Yes.
But I think it may, we can pull that out a little bit because when we have been employing two separate attorneys, the same attorney for two separate processes, we're going to have to do a little more research to find out exactly where the cost differences will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what will we pay for this particular one? What will we pay if we're in the consortium? So that you can see that.
And will this board be affected in a negative way in terms of our voice in this?
Are we losing some?
No.
It seems
to me we could potentially lose our preferred representation, right? The rest of the board could vote, we don't like Franzik, we're going to use so-and-so,
based on what I'm
reading here. And then, so we might not be able to select the attorney that's going to do the interview.
In which case, we could withdraw from the consortium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 30-day date, which is a pretty very small timeline. And if, in the event that you had an appeal, you'd have a lot more than 30 days to make those kind of decisions.
Well, you have about a 30-day window once you have notification of the timeline. But if the attorney changes, you'll know that prior to, probably, unless you're in the midst of that change and an appeal comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But
who else besides the school district speaks at the appeal? I mean, I know it's every taxing district, so it could be
the park district
mm-hmm. or whatnot. But mm-hmm. if none of those guys speak up, who speaks up? Is there a county tax assessor?
Is there a state representative of the state? You mean someone that takes presents evidence?
Well, if there's no one there, then no one would speak. If you aren't present, then no one will speak for you.
Right.
So, like the ones you said, we don't pursue or don't take action on.
The decision is made by the county assessor.
Okay, and then in those cases, are we having to, if they lower the assessment, refund some sort of money?
Mm-hmm. We've not had any refunds, no.
No.
So it's only at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
So there's none that go to state that we just say, it's probably won't. I'm just trying to understand, you know, which ones do we have to give money back and which ones do we not?
Well, if a property is reassessed for the year in which it's appealed, then the tax distribution is spread out over the other taxpayers.
So it's only the ones that are in the prior mm-hmm. years.
But even if we didn't attend that and they got their assessment agreed upon, we would still owe them. We owe that money either way.
If it's a refund.
Right.
Correct.
Now, because we talked a little bit about this earlier.
You want to give these up?
If if someone appeals their assessment, they have to do it right after they get their reassessment. There's a certain amount of time you have to appeal. So that goes through the appeal process. At what point do we get involved? I mean, is it...
By who? By we? Who do you mean?
District 41.
District 41. Okay.
We get notified how soon after they make their appeal?
We get notified whenever there's a property valuation change of $100,000
right.
or more.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Even when it goes to the Board of Review, which is the first step. If they lose at the Board of Review, then they can go to PTAB. They can appeal it to PTAB. What happens there is the timing difference is that I've done my initial appeal. I lost. Mm-hmm. So I still have to pay my taxes. I can go to PTAB a year later after taxes are paid. And if I win at PTAB, then I'll hold a refund of prior year's taxes.
So do we have to do our intervention at the initial appeal, or can we hop on board once they go to PTAB?
You would do it at the initial at the initial notification at the Board of Review level if we deem that it's the value changes a significant amount to avoid having to do it at the PTAB level. You kind of like shorten the timeline of, so then it's done within a same period of time, okay? And so, again, that's where we rely on legal counsel to advise us to say, okay, here's an appeal that's going to the Board of Review. It's changed by over $100,000. Do you think that, based on the numbers here, is it worth me paying you to even intervene for us at the Board of Review level?
Mm-hmm.
And they come back to us and say, probably not, because the change is not significant enough.
At that point, they haven't paid the taxes yet?
They have not paid the taxes yet.
Okay.
So
then how do we, so when we get involved in these issues where, like the one we'll be talking about later, where we might lose $55,000 for one particular year, that's because it's dragged out for so long, and we've already intervened before.
More than likely we have under a previous review process, correct.
It's a broken part of the system where they don't redistribute the tax.
Right.
And so their remedy is
County, there's years to
appeal one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or the remedy for payment is to pull it instead of...
Mm-hmm. Well, the remedy for payment, we talked earlier too, they basically take it out of the next disbursement that we would have gotten. And then in your next year's PTEL calculation, it shows up in the total EAV number.
Right. And then it's dispersed across.
Yeah, we don't write any checks back to anybody. It's basically taken as a credit against the next tax distribution.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we'll get less taxes than we thought we should have. And then really going forward, it's the rest of the district taxpayers that get screwed because that lowered evaluation, the dollar, we're still going to get the dollars, it's just going to be distributed to the rest of the taxpayers.
Which is why when there's a significant amount of money, you want to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's being conscious and conscientious of the remainder of your taxpayers.
Right. Mm-hmm. And key to what Phyllis was describing is that's the reason to go to our council and have them look at the numbers and say, yes, it makes sense, no, it doesn't. I mean, we don't have, I'll speak for myself, I don't have the experience or the level of knowledge to do that, which is why, obviously, this process is in place.
And I think that we're confusing this with some much more complicated or politically charged topic. It really is just a business topic.
Yeah. No, I think the, you know, to Erica's point about the cooperative, right? I think conceptually I would certainly agree if we can share the expense and do it together, it completely makes sense. And if we're doing that, I think the concern is, and I'll try to express what I think the concern is in the email we got, you know, not necessarily the board's opinion or whatever, but I think the concern is when you start to bring all these groups together, you've got a firm that's in charge of it, you know, does that grow into, you know, let's look at everyone's house that was worth $5 million that went to $4 million, right? And I think the answer is no. I'm pretty sure the answer is no, at least from my perspective, I would not be interested in that. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's more of a messaging thing that okay, here's this group. Now their charge is gonna be, you know, let's all look at this together. and
well, that's
we're
one person's thought.
Yeah, correct.
Right, that
correct.
It would go down.
Well, I don't know. It could be others. I mean, we've got one email on it, right? But so it could be that we're willing to, and I think the issue is we're willing to say, hey, we wouldn't do it unless it was commercial property, and the question is, are we willing to write that in? So, you know, that's a
question. It's one of our follow-up questions.
Right, well, that's a follow-up question. And then the other one, at least for me, is it sounds like there are some rules and engagements that still aren't defined that may or may not have implications on us. And maybe if we understood what the agenda for this first meeting of this group getting together to say, okay, here are the things we're going to decide on, right? And maybe we already know, in our situation, maybe we already know who the attorney is or who the consultants are, and as long as you guys are comfortable with them.
I think the bottom line is that, you know, Bob, Cicerella, Phyllis, and Ann would not put this district or board in jeopardy or get us involved in a cooperative that didn't certainly represent the district well and certainly our fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers. So that's
yeah,
you know, with
I'm
answers to these questions, you're not. You're
no.
not. I just want to state that, you know, for the record.
I have several questions that have been raised, and let me ask if these are sufficient questions and if there are new ideas to be raised. Otherwise, we'll get some answers to these questions and bring those back for our next meeting. John has asked, is there a little bit more information we could know about what will happen when this group comes together and what their
decisions still have to make?
Are we interested in, is it possible to confine this to commercial only? I'll say that with a cautionary lens because I don't know that we want to shut ourselves off from the potential.
And legal may say that doesn't make sense, and here's why. We just need to be able to understand the message to that.
And then what about an appeal we choose not to participate in? What is our ability to, on any given appeal, to not participate but still remain as a part of the consortium?
Mm-hmm. I think someone else raised the question then, of if we didn't, but then they won.
Right. It's just clarifying that piece.
Clarifying.
Okay? Is that...
Maybe I'm still confused. I still perceive this as a loss of board approval or control, so to speak.
Not. Because the board doesn't approve.
The board doesn't. Yeah.
You don't approve things on a case-by-case basis, I guess.
You approve, if you approve tonight, so if we don't do the consortia, and if you approve tonight the resolution to higher representation, you've done so for any appeals that will come forward between now and 2011, I believe.
Oh, I thought it was just that specific.
No. It's a renewal of a previous resolution that the board approved. So it's simply a renewal that expired. We didn't have reason to use it. We now have reason to use it again. So it's just renewing that commitment. So the practice is not that the board approves every property tax appeal. And again, because we're looking at something that has significant repercussions for the district, if we were to come ask you for permission to do that, it would almost look like bad management. That, you know, we're not just doing it. So what we're asking you to approve for us is legal intervention so that we have expertise there.
So then I guess that scenario is coming to my mind. If we the approval tonight for the 1 year, and then later on we approve this, it sounds to me like after that 1 year expires, if this consortium wanted to pursue something, we would then have to give another resolution.
No, this will put into force.
So it's indefinite.
As long as the intergovernmental agreement is, because the group will be to get meets twice a year, they are empowered to determine whether the consortium stays together.
I await the answers to the question.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? Okay. Next item for discussion is board policy for section 2 and one additional 4.30. You've had the policies there. We will ask, this is a first reading, we'll ask for action on these policies if there, unless there are revisions at our February 21st meeting. The way that we've outlined this in the presentation is to provide you all language changes in red and many no changes, which makes reading this relatively easy. I'd like to thank Maureen and Nancy Moak for their work on getting this in order and easy presentation for you, and like to thank Dan and Erica for the good work they did in looking at the policies themselves and making revisions to them. So, are there any comments or questions on what we have presented to you this evening?
One question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I've been asked a number of times, and I apologize for not asking sooner. It just dawned on me as I'm sitting here going through this for like the fourth time, in terms of the student discipline. And I know this is a recurring theme.
Which section are you?
Seven.
I think you are probably in the second packet, which are compliance.
Sorry, wrong packet. I apologize. Mm-hmm. I'll hold my question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But do email myself and Dan and Ann.
Oh, we're not discussing the second packet today?
The second packet you are taking action on.
Oh, okay.
You can discuss that at the time, but you are taking action because they're compliance and you don't really have an option.
No, they're compliance questions. Yeah, so I'll ask my other question later. That's fine.
Okay.
These are all compliance issues.
I have a question on 2140, where we've added language, which, if I read the summary sheet table correctly, this wasn't a compliance issue.
It was not. But it is a recommendation from IASB.
This is the other social media.
Other social media.
So what are we... We can't get all on Ning here and talk to each other.
Oh, well, no, you still can't violate the Open Meetings Act.
Right.
Regardless of what social media you use.
Okay,
so that's really what that says. It's just adding the other social media because they are there and available to board members to use.
So then you can't post to, say, a message board and have other board members respond back?
You cannot violate the Open Meetings Act. So if you go to a message board and you make a statement about something referenced that could be interpreted as board business, and two other board members respond to that message, you are in violation of the Open Meetings Act because you...
Actually, more than two board members, right?
No, because two board members, anything over two board members...
Right, over two.
Yeah.
Right.
So two plus you, because you're the person who's making the statement.
Right,
they're engaged with you.
So then,
I think it's more responding to each other. I mean, you can still respond to public community questions.
Mm-hmm.
If you read that later on, it talks about individual responses to questions posed by community administrators, school staff, so on and so forth. I think it's just, talking about the board business.
So you basically can't really reply to or engage in a discussion with...
You can't. You can respond to the person. You just can't talk about board business.
So you want to talk about anything other than the school board business? Go right ahead. But if it has anything to do with the school board business,
well, two board members can have.
If you can answer questions,
information. What you should not do, and I would caution you seriously, would not to be engaged in dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
With community members and certainly not with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if a board member or if a community member posts a question or makes a statement and says, Bob, I want to know what you think about that statement, you can respond to that person, but you should maintain the information that you share to be factual information. I think this is a cautionary area, and one that is certainly one where there's a great deal of vulnerability. But the bottom line is, don't use the media to and lose track of the open meetings.
Right, right.
Well, and in addition to that, whether it's you post on these, I mean, I think we as a board, we have to remind ourselves that whether we post under our own names or some other name,
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing. You are who you are. And
right.
It could be your Facebook.
That's a good point.
Right.
Right. And I think where I've seen this written up in an example in one of the IASB, those single pages we get sometimes, and
right.
we won several months ago about this, and it talked about this how easy it is to get sucked into this, where you might be messaging on a blog or something like that, and then questions posed to one board member, another board member comes in and says, yes, you know, as Bob has said, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then the third board member comes on and says, yes, I agree with Bob and Erica because they, da, da, da. We are now having a conversation, in violation of open mm-hmm. meetings.
And, of course, this doesn't only pertain to social media.
No.
Mm-hmm. It's social interactions. I mean, any interaction that is not sanctioned by an open meeting.
Okay.
Any other questions on Section 2?
Yeah, 2170, mm-hmm. the AP. Maybe I missed it. This is the qualification-based selections.
Correct. There's no change substantively between the previous AP and this AP,
okay.
Other than preference of display.
So we didn't have any thou shalt go out to bid every X
no.
years?
No.
Okay. This is just to make it
and
easier.
And that is not required.
All right. I think that's all the
questions
I have.
Other board members?
Well, wait, I see some blue ink. 260 AP went from general personnel to the school board now?
260 AP.
We crossed out general personnel, now it says school board at the top.
Because Section 2 mainly deals with
school board. We don't have a general personnel section.
Okay.
I'm sorry, was that
260 AP?
2260.
AP.
It's just, we don't have general personnel.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
Any other questions by other board members?
One thing I just didn't know, Eric, if you want to bring up Section 2210.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. If people will turn to that, it's 2210. Let me find it. And I had brought this to the table based on, hold on, let me find that. 2210.
There you go.
Thank you. This is our organizational school board meeting, and I had brought this up 2 years ago when the last election with Drew and Dan, and at the time with Jack Kaler, and it was around more transparency on people interested in board leadership positions. So I said to Dan and to Ann that I wanted to at least put this in so we could raise the conversation prior to elections and have some board conversation around this and see what people felt. So please take some time, post it this, or dog ear it and go back and take a look at it.
I did have a good thing you brought up, but
sure.
I missed this blue ink earlier. The only question I had is, should we insert board member elect in here? Because mm-hmm. you've got 2 weeks prior to the organizational meeting, and that's only 28 days after the election. So,
or board member
unless
elect.
You
board member elect, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
good point.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because at that point they're a part of that conversation. So,
do you
Can
have
you
that
define
as
board member elect anywhere, or is it?
I think
defined
it's.
Enough?
I think it's defined enough. Now, did you have that as any board member or board member elect?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when Erica and I recall, we had that discussion at the last receiving of the board, and I think that's an excellent. It allows transparency. It allows everyone to and I guess I would also say it allows the community to see who is showing an actual interest in what it is. I think the misconception is that people elect board members and then they too are electing the leadership roles on the board, and that's obviously not what happens. So I think it's a great idea. Thank you for including it.
Mm-hmm. So if you have any further comments about Section 2 between now and February 21st, please email. Probably the most helpful thing to do would be to email Dan Erica and me and copy Maureen or put all four of us on there so we all get that information and have it, make sure we can get it into, be included in discussion, whether it's through my summary to you or some other form.
I mean, I think it's good practice. My brain is still a little, I'm still a little troubled with the shall, because then I start thinking about penalties and, you know, I'm just trying to understand. So if someone doesn't do this, does that mean at the reorganization meeting they can't throw off their...
Well, the intention, as I wrote this, is that we would agree as a board that this is a good practice and that it causes, you know, board members and board members elect to consider, you know, the level of importance, what they, you know, want to do with that board leadership position. So I went back and forth with that, Dan. I forget if we talked about it at our policy committee meeting, but I put, you know, different words in there changes the intention. So I would say at this for this read, that people should read it with that intention, that it's so that there is, it causes thinking about this prior to, you know, certainly well before the organizational meeting. I'm sorry, Terry, didn't mean to interrupt.
So it's not a requirement. This is something you thought should be in the board policy.
It is not required by law. That is correct.
No.
Okay.
LD.
Any other discussion on that?
Okay,
we'll move on to action items, number or letter A, the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes 1, human resources, personnel report, including employment recommendations, additional supplemental pay, and multi-year employment contract. 2, finance, facilities, and operations reports, including the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, and the 2010-2011 FOIA report. And 3, other matters, including the board regular meeting minutes and closed session minutes as corrected on the copies you have in front of you from January 3rd, 2011. Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Stoller?
Yes. Next, we have the superintendent's recommendations. 1, the Innovative Modular Solutions lease renewal. At its January 3, 2001 regular meeting, the Board of Education discussed the administration's recommendation to approve a 3-year lease extension in the amount of $138,250 per year for a total of $414,750 with Innovative Modular Solutions for the modular classrooms at Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin, Churchill, Forest Glen, and Hadley Junior High. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
We had discussion, you know, at our last meeting, so I want to, you know, again, put that out there publicly, and that I have no further questions.
Okay. Anyone else? Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yep.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Soler?
Yes. 2, resolution authorizing intervention in proceedings before the State of Illinois Property Tax Appeal Board. At its January 3, 2011 regular meeting, the Board of Education discussed the administration's recommendation to approve the extension of the existing agreement between the law firm of Forensic Radlett and School District 41 to intervene and defend itself on matters that have been appealed from the DuPage County Assessor's Office to the State Illinois Property Tax Appeals Board. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second?
I need Drew second.
Oh, Drew second. Mm-hmm. Discussion?
This is what we're, you know, part of us, and it's the same thing we talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess my question is in that wording of the agreement, which I will find eventually, we're authorizing them to intervene in appeal proceedings in all
2008 and 11 assessment mm-hmm. appeals.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point, I mean, if we're authorizing them.
We decide which ones.
Yeah, so I guess mm-hmm. that's the question. What's the decision process? Mm-hmm. So Franzic is you know, we get notice of all of these appeals. And then do we take the appeals that we're interested in to Franzic, or do they concurrently?
Well, we do in consultation with them whether or not this is in our best interest and what it means to us financially. So we work with them. They serve as our advisor.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't take an appeal automatically because it can't.
That's where I wanted to make sure that this language in here does not force them to intervene in anything that we don't necessarily want them to.
No, it just all means that we don't have to come back and do another resolution that with any of those that occurred between 2008 and 2011.
Okay. Does anyone have any other?
No.
The timeline of this resolution. Would we rescind it once this intergovernmental agreement is signed?
I don't think
or would we keep this?
Well, I don't think we would have to. I don't know that there would be any reason for us to rescind it, but it would be inactive.
This doesn't really say it's good for a year. It says it covers those years of appeals.
Correct.
So it doesn't have a timeline on it. Other than the timeline with those appeals.
Yeah, so through the 2011 taxing year would be what this particular agreement would be in effect for.
Okay. And, you know, the reason we're doing this is because one has come up as 87 is also interested in.
This is so that we can move forward with this one, and it makes sense to put, you know, as we said before, not doing every year. This is 2008, so now we'll do another one for 2009. That it covers those that period of time.
But we need to file on one or two items mm-hmm. that are before that we'll run out of time if we wait for this intergovernmental.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I understand. But I just curious if 87 is also.
We can check and give you an answer. I'm going to guess they are. But I don't
have. From our previous discussion, it was my impression that they were.
I believe they are, but I would rather verify that than.
Is there any issue in number two? There we're authorizing for appeals filed at the PTAB, for which the board receives notice from the local county board of review. So I thought the first step in their process was to appeal to the Board of Review. Is that correct, or are they appealing to the assessor?
But what happens is Board of Review is the intermediary telling us what their decision was, and then they file with the Board of Review that they're appealing it, and then that appeal moves to the PTAB.
So would we never intervene at the Board of Review level?
No, we would.
But that's not what this agreement.
Right.
It's only for PTAB.
Right.
Okay. So
which is a much more formalized legal process.
Okay, so if we were to intervene at the Board of Review level, would that just be the district doing that, or would we hire?
We would do it in consultation with.
Okay.
Right.
But we may not need to send representatives there.
Okay.
Right. What they've done in the past is probably help us assemble the documents to defend the case. They would direct us as to what documents we would have to assemble.
Yeah. But the level of testimony is much different at PTAB.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? A roll call, please.
Mr. Kendall?
Yes. Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Solak?
Yes. I'm sorry, John, you weren't voting present, were you? You were voting yes?
Yes. Okay. I said yes. Here.
All right, item 3, Board Policy and Procedures Compliance Revisions, First Readings and Adoption. The administration is recommending that the board approve and adopt the policy and procedures revisions that are being recommended for immediate action as presented, since they are based on changes in the law and they must be adopted. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Drew?
Oh. Discussion, please.
What I'd just like to point out that these are compliance updates, that we have made whatever the law has required us to do, and some of them are more involved, such as the allergy policy that is required to be in place, and I think that's probably the biggest one.
Bullying.
And bullying, we just had to have some language. And I don't want to preempt your question, Tara, but the whole discipline policy will come again before the parent-teacher advisory this spring. And so we could see further updates on the discipline policy. I'm going to guess we will as we look at the matrix and how that is being used this year and doing a close alignment to the policy. You'll also be hearing at some point in the near future from the bullying task force. There may be implications there for that policy. So I would see discipline as being, we're updating at this point to get sexting into the language, which is the compliance piece, and then we will bring, you know, there'll be further review of that policy. Did I preempt your question?
No, I guess my question, it's not really that timely because my in anticipation of recommendations to changes, so it's fine.
Okay.
But I'll send my questions, comments to the policy and to you.
Anyone else? Okay, roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Solis?
Yes. Item 10, upcoming meetings. The upcoming meetings of the Board of Education include February 7th, 2011, Board of Education regular meeting at the Central Services Office, and the February 21st, 2001 public hearing at 7:15 at Abraham Lincoln School, as well as the regular board meeting at 7:30 p.m. or immediately following the public hearing at Abraham Lincoln School. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board?
It's not so much a matter, it's just a comment I would like to make, sort of a kudos. And I was at Hadley last week during the lunch hour helping to hand out schedules. And I haven't been there at lunchtime for a very long time, and I was there a few years ago prior to the new changes, and it was loud, disruptive. I mean, it was sensory overload. However, when I was there last week, I can't say enough to compliment the staff and especially the students on their behavior in the lunchroom. I mean, it was night and day. And even as some of the lunch periods got larger, the show of respect for fellow students, the show of respect to the staff that was there, just the orderliness of the shift changes of the kids, and just it was just a really nice feeling to be there. And one of the moms that was helping me, this was her first year there. They had moved from another state, and she commented about it as well. And the first mom that was there had been there for many years, and she commented again, "Wow, it's so quiet." So I just wanted to say again to the Hadley staff what a great job that they have done with these changes. The kids just don't even think about it. And it's just really a nice place to be.
Great.
So,
thank
and
you.
I did we'll go to Chris and his staff afterwards when I saw him walking out the door. But I just, you know, get such a bad rap sometimes, and it's really not. It's a nice place to be.
I just want to thank Ann for including the orchestra letter from Dr. Dranzoff and from Mrs. Alinas, and the changes that are going to happen as a result of that, and keeping us informed, because I know that's been an issue that some or all of us have been had to address in some way. So thank you for the update. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, Tara's comment made me think of it. I was as a civilian at the new parent indoctrination at Hadley for
indoctrination.
I've got a fifth grader, my first fifth grader.
Whee!
But no, it was really well done, and there was some, they passed out some really good information, but they mentioned that Chris, Dr. Dranzoff mentioned that they've had visitors come through from other schools and walk into the cafeteria and be like, what's going on here? This is nothing like the cafeterias that we have. So I've heard that comment. So it'll be interesting. I hope to go to some Third Thursdays and experience it firsthand. Okay, public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Okay, hearing none. The board has determined it does not have a need to adjourn to closed session. May I have a motion to adjourn the board meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.